Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of T1 Talks. This is a podcast where we aim to share our experiences living with type 1 diabetes to build a sense of community for diabetics, both type 1 and 2. We want to dispel any myths about what it means to be a type 1 and increase diabetic awareness through our stories. I'm Gianna, a type 1 diabetic of 14 years and a recent graduate of the College of New Jersey.
And I'm Victoria. I'm a medical student from Saskatchewan, Canada, and I was just diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in early 2020.
So today we're going to be talking about a topic that affects all diabetics, and that's the cost that's associated with diabetes.
The cost of everything diabetic is seriously so outrageous. I can't believe it even now. But like, I'm wondering, Gianna, since you were so young when you were diagnosed, did you realize how expensive it was? Or was that something that you grew to realize? Like for me, it was the first time I ever went to the pharmacy.
So I was and still am in an extremely privileged situation because I'm able to use my parents' health insurance. I grew up with a really great plan and I've had parents that have supported me for a long time. So it really wasn't until I started paying my own bills that I realized just how expensive everything really is. My supply cycles are broken down into 90 to 100 day periods for the most part. But if I were to break them down monthly, it would probably average around 100 a month, sometimes a little more depending on what exactly I need. In certain cases, I'm lucky enough to go in with my dad. For example, with my Omnipod, our insurance will say something like, we'll cover anything over $1,500. So once me and him put the cost of our pods together and we hit that $1,500, they'll pay for the rest of the months for the year. With him, I'm able to hit that amount a lot faster. Keep in mind, this insurance plan is $700 a month, but these rates are insanely low for diabetics, which is why I was so angry when I saw this, because let's say you're working a minimum wage job, you're trying to save up for rent, groceries, student loans, whatever other costs you have, the last thing you want to be putting money aside for is upwards of $100 on your medication that your life depends on. So once I started paying these things, I started looking into it more because I wasn't sure what the standard was for other people. I wanted to know if what I was paying was expensive, if it was cheap, and a lot of diabetics turn 26, get dropped from their parents' plans, and end up putting their lives in danger rationing insulin or food.
I promise you, no diabetic asked for diabetes. This is a cost that's going to affect us our whole life. It's not like we just pay it for a couple months and then suddenly it's over. This is something that we're going to have to pay for every single year. And to me, it's just absurd that it's so expensive just to stay alive. There's also the price of copays whenever you see a doctor. So with diabetes, you really have to be on top of your feet. You might have to get your eyes checked out more than normal. So there's these smaller costs that kind of get overlooked as well. The type of supplies and amount of supplies is obviously unique to each diabetic. But as I began to look into the issue more and more, it was clear that insulin affordability is a big crisis, especially in the United States right now. It's just not right.
Definitely not. I think it's one of the most scary things from anyone's perspective, I guess, about diabetes is just what happens if you can't afford what you need. You die.
Yeah, well, and I think that's where the bigger issue lies because then people start to say, what don't I need? And they try to prioritize these things like maybe I can take less foods, then in turn I can take less insulin. Or maybe they try to lower their basal rates because they think they can get by without it. But when you start doing rationing like that, that's what leads to a lot of diabetics ending up in DKA or it can do damage to other parts of your bodies when you start taking away certain parts of your lifestyle. So that's really something you can't afford to mess around with.
Well, and often people have to do both, right? They have to ration their food so that they don't need as much insulin. And then they're also rationing their insulin. And then their sugars are running higher and they're more at risk for further complications that at least in Canada are covered, but in the States wouldn't be. So if somebody needs their leg amputated or something like that, you would have to pay for that somehow. I have no idea how. As a Canadian, I'm very privileged in that way. But even with like your super cheap supplies, you're still paying over $100 a month. And like with that $1,500 a year, whatever that is, plus like all your co-pays and stuff, like that's something that a non-diabetic gets to spend that money on anything they want. They can buy coffee, they can buy alcohol, they can save up and go on a trip. And it's just money that we have to spend to stay alive.
Right. And I started to get really nervous when thinking about my career because I've always been the type of person to stress, like, do not let diabetes ruin your life. Do not let it stop you from doing anything you want to do. But at the same time, whenever I'm thinking about my career, that's always in the back of my head. I really enjoyed spending a year in Florida doing my Disney college program. I've always wanted to spend a year working abroad somewhere. But in some ways, that's not an option for me because I need to make sure whatever job I have offers me great benefits. And to do that, you need to be consistent and you need to stay with the same company for a while. And you have to be aware of the fact that I just graduated college at 23 years old. I have until 26 to find my own health insurance plan. a lot of entry-level jobs don't have great plans, and it often takes 6 months to a year for companies to offer you their health insurance anyway, so that puts me back a year already. And if I was to go into a plan that wasn't as great as the one I have now, I could be put at risk when I have to switch insulins or lose my Dexcoms. For example, the insurance company might say, well, we can't offer you Humalog, the insulin you're used to taking. Instead, we can offer you this more generic brand of insulin, often referred to as the Walmart brand of insulin. And while I'm grateful that we do have the option for these generic brands, it's extremely dangerous. I've been told by multiple people that Walmart insulin takes a lot longer to absorb, and if your body's not used to it, it can be extremely dangerous.
Definitely. I think that it's a danger, especially to younger diabetics who don't have experience with this insulin ever. We've always used super fast acting insulins, and this isn't a super fast acting insulin. This is an older insulin that works slower. People die from using this insulin when they don't know what they're doing. And personally, I wouldn't, unless, again, right, like it was like a crazy emergency. And as a Canadian, again, I'm super privileged. I can walk into any emergency room and they'll give me insulin to go home with, and it's free. And so that's obviously not the case in the States. And I guess like Walmart insulin is better than dying, but if you have other options, like talking to maybe friends who have diabetes and seeing if they have extra insulin, or even talking to your endocrinologist since they often have samples in the office, but really reaching out to try and find an insulin that works the same as the insulin you're on, I think is important. It's so tragic to lose a life so young in such a preventable way. We have a drug that manages diabetes, and it's just not affordable enough. Like, I can't believe it.
It's just crazy because I see all these people online sharing stories about how they're paying more than $100 for insulin. Then you see these headlines go viral and they're saying, we're putting an insulin cap at $35, at $40. And then you look into how the diabetics are supposed to get the insulin and it's near impossible, or it's just lasting them a month or two. We need some kind of long-term solution here.
It's so not right. I know that I've touched on this before, but like, I think that the biggest surprise for me was just how expensive everything was being out of province in Saskatchewan. So I have a unique perspective where I get to see how much these things are costing because I have to submit them separately to the BC provincial government. So I pay for everything out of pocket, and then I can submit some of my receipts, although not very much. We'll talk about how much I can get back because it's almost nothing. But when I was first diagnosed with diabetes, I was diagnosed type 2. And so they put me on these meds. And I was horrified when I filled my first month and it was like almost $300. I think it was $280 for that first month. And again, that would have been covered through, or was covered through, the BC government, but I had to pay out of pocket and then submit my receipts to get it paid back.
Yeah, so you still had to pay this money initially that a lot of people just don't have.
Oh yeah, like I had to have that $300 in my bank account to buy those pills. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to get them. And so I was really fortunate that I was able to. And I'm sure I'll say that 100 times as I keep going, because it is so expensive for me to be diabetic, not in my home province, because it is everything I pay out of pocket except for doctor's visits. That's the only thing I don't have to pay for. Everything else I pay full price and then I get it reimbursed.
Yeah. And in the end, did you even end up needing those pills? Because I know you wanted to take insulin. You didn't think you needed those pills.
Yeah. So I did 4 weeks. So I took that first full month of the pills when we were still seeing if they were going to work, because they can take 4 to 6 weeks to really start kicking in. And then I stayed on them for another week and a half before I stopped them and started on insulin. So I was really mad with that extra $300 I spent to not take the medicine. I still have them, so we'll see. But I guess like having paid for it up front, I really realize how much my patients have to pay, which I think is really important as a physician when you're prescribing things, is to know, okay, if my patient's out of province, she's going to have to pay $280 to pick this up from the pharmacy, which I'm sure my doctor didn't think about at the time. But really for me, like that could have been make or break for me being able to take that prescription. And there are cheaper options. So it's important, I think, to talk to your doctor about what the cheaper options are, even for things like insulin. But honestly, that was just the tip of the iceberg, because now that I am type 1, I'm spending easily double that on supplies, and it isn't all covered by my government. So I have to pay a lot of that myself. The most expensive thing I have to pay for is my Dexcom, and it's $300 a month. So that's literally, it's $100 per sensor, and that adds up so fast. It's crazy. And that's the cheapest you can get it. So that's like me on the subscription service getting the free transmitters and everything.
And it really sucks because all this amazing diabetic technology is coming out into the world, but it's not yet affordable for everyone.
And the thing that really gets me as a Canadian is that we pay for people's hospital stays. And there's a lot of good research right now that shows that continuous glucose monitors reduce people's instances of diabetic ketoacidosis where they're in hospital. And they also reduce risk of hypoglycemia, which is low sugars. And so they make people safer. They reduce diabetic anxiety, which is something we talked about last week. And there's just so many positives with these that they do save money. And so it's ridiculous to me that they aren't covered in Canada, because we're already paying for all of these things. Like, how is it not cheaper to pay for me to have a CGM than to have me go into hospital with DKA twice a year? It's baffling to me. But the fact that I spend as much money on my diabetes supplies as some of my friends do on rent, for some perspective. So I spend about $600 a month.
Yeah, and like you said before, we could be factoring this in towards other bills and payments or doing things to enjoy ourselves rather than always having to make sure we have that bottom sum for supplies.
Exactly. And this isn't even something I can say, oh, this month I need, but next month I'm fine. Like, this is something I need every single month. I need to make sure that I can pay for my pump supplies. I need to make sure I can pay for my Dexcom. I will never stop saying this. I'm so lucky that I'm able to purchase these things with and work it into my budget. But I don't know how I would do it without family support. $600 a month is too much, right? So I wouldn't have a Dexcom.
Oh, 100%. I wouldn't be able to afford half of my diabetic supplies without this family plan. And I think a lot of people assume that the biggest stress that comes along with diabetes is the physical symptoms. But what they don't think about is the fear of not being able to afford your supplies. You'll have a lot less physical symptoms when you're able to afford to take care of your diabetes properly. And the idea of having to go days without insulin, I mean, I would be dead in less than a week.
And they're definitely something that impact every single one of us to some degree. I think in Canada, definitely there's Canadian privilege with the universal healthcare system. There's a little bit of issues with the provincial and federal coverage, obviously, but overall, like, I wouldn't have it any other way. I can see my doctor for free. I can go to the hospital for free. But I don't get everything for free. Again, because I'm out of province, it's a little weird, but like, I should get one free eye visit a year. I should get one free foot care visit a year because I have diabetes. But again, like, I saw the eye doctor recently because I was having some floaters and they were freaking me out. And I had to pay $140 for that visit to see the eye doctor, which I'm really sorry. It was not a for fun visit. It was a, am I going to lose my vision? Is this something I need to be concerned about? It was a healthcare issue, which it just isn't something that can be covered. Like, it's covered for Saskatchewan residents, but it's not covered for me. So again, I have to submit that receipt separately. It's a whole paperwork issue. I can't stand it.
Yeah. And I think that's a whole nother issue on its own, because you can never just talk to one person and have it be simple to get your medication. You have to talk to five different people. I can't even tell you how many times I've run out of some of my diabetic supplies because there was a miscommunication between the doctor or the insurance company, and it's almost always complicated.
Exactly. Like, it took me weeks to even find the right form so that I could submit it to the BC government. It's a crazy thing. The one thing, though, that I really appreciate is that as someone who's out of province, I pay full price for my insulin, and I see how much it would cost for Americans who come up here to get insulin. So there's like the insulin caravans that come up, I'm sure not right now, with COVID, but that come up and people purchase insulin from Canada because it has, we were talking about this earlier, but it has a price cap. So that means that we don't let the pharmaceutical companies or the pharmacies sell insulin above a certain price. And just so that, I guess, listeners know, for me, like, I was on Lantus, which is my long acting, and it was probably about $120 or $130 for five pens. So that's, for me, probably, I guess that would be about almost 2 months worth of insulin for me, which is super cheap compared to American prices. Like, I know that. And then my Apidra, my fast acting, is about the same. It's a little bit cheaper, and I don't get pens, so it's even a little cheaper. But I think it's about $80 or $90 for five pens or five vials. Not the big ones, but the 3 mils. And when I think about that, like, that's still so expensive to be paying for. But coming from like the States, I've seen people purchasing insulin in the States that, like, for 3 months of insulin, they're paying $2,000. So it's just like a night and day difference.
Yeah, and I'm sure everyone's sick of me saying it at this point, but I just want to really emphasize the fact that we as diabetics should not have to limit any part of our lifestyle to be able to afford insulin. That's just common sense. That shouldn't happen.
We just want to eat food, Gianna.
That's all I'm asking for, people.
Please let me live and eat. The treatment for diabetes before insulin was starvation. I think that that's a real thing that we like to pretend doesn't happen anymore, but it absolutely does, where people starve themselves so that they don't because they can't afford it. It's not so that they don't have to take their insulin. It's because they can't take it because they can't buy it. And then I guess I just like wanted to share my story about sort of going through all these costs and how it sort of started adding up. And so I don't have any, I have provincial insurance through BC, but I don't have any private insurance because it doesn't make sense for me. It's too expensive and it doesn't actually cover anything. So it doesn't cover CGM or pump supplies. And like, it doesn't really cover anything. It's dumb. Even honestly though, like as a doctor, I won't get work coverage. So I'll have to buy my own private healthcare and or health insurance. And so that'll be a little bit better. But right now I'm forced to use the school's insurance and it's just not worth it for me to pay for, especially being out of province, because I have to prove to the insurance company that my province has covered it before they'll pay for it. And it's just a mess. But the first time I went in again, like I started on those pills and then I stopped the pills and started on insulin. And so I started on Lantus first and I bought the Lantus. I bought a box of needles. I got a Sharps container and I swear it was like over $300 just for this. And I was horrified. I didn't realize that a box of 100 needles was going to cost me $50. Like that was insane. And the Lantus was expensive and I'm pretty sure I paid for the Sharps container. Although now, because in Canada, so what we get to do is I'll just bring my full Sharps container and they give me an empty one to improve sort of people bringing them in.
How long did those 100 needles last you?
With the Lantus, they were gonna last me a long time because I was only using one a day. But then I got a Pedra. And then I was on 5 or 6 needles a day.
Oh, so you were on Lantus alone? Because when I took Lantus, I know that I had to take that with my Novolog.
Yeah, so I was on Lantus alone because they still weren't convinced that I was type 1 diabetic at that point. So they were putting me on Lantus with the pills to help my sugars come down. But it became really clear that the pills were doing nothing. And so I stopped taking the pills and was switched to type 1. But for type 2, it can be helpful to add that long acting to just give you a little bit of extra insulin throughout the day while you're sort of getting things under control. So that's why there was a delay. And then when I got my Apedra, I obviously knew it was going to be expensive, and it was, although less expensive, still expensive. And I was like, it sucks because I was already being diagnosed with something new. And I was already spending like $600 on my prescriptions. And I was scared about starting the Apedra. And for me, eating, especially because my sugars were so high all the time, it was really hard because I just felt gross after I ate because my sugars would skyrocket. I was living alone at the time. And I was like really worried about the safety piece of insulin. Like when I was asked originally from a nurse before I was even considering that I would need insulin, she asked me like, she knew I was going to need insulin. She asked me, she said, what's your biggest fear about going on insulin? And I'm like, I'm afraid of going into a hypoglycemic low and not being able to get out because I live alone. And so she and everyone gave me really strict rules about how to eat and how to dose my insulin. I had a CGM at the time, a continuous glucose monitor. So that was definitely good. And I got my first one for free. So that was extra good because they're $100 each for the Libre. But I had all these rules and I had all this stuff, and I went and got my insulin. I bought a bag of Doritos and that was my plan for the night. Was I was going to give myself one injection of 2 units. I was going to eat my Doritos and I was going to go to bed. And that was great. It worked really well, but it broke my bank and it wasn't even the most expensive part. Like my story just gets more and more expensive. It makes me so grumpy. So I had the Freestyle Libre and it's cheaper, but again, there's no coverage for CGMs in Canada, I don't think anywhere, maybe some places for kids and some private insurance plans, few and far between cover them. But the Libre wasn't enough for me. I needed those push alerts. And so I had to switch to the Dexcom, which added an extra $100 a month onto my bill. So instead of $200 a month for my CGM, it's $300. So then I got the Dexcom and now I'm spending way too much money on the Dexcom. But there is a real push from the Canadian Diabetes Association and from the Canadian Federation of Medical Students to push for CGM coverage, to push for universal pharmacare, which we say we have, but we don't. So to actually cover everything through the national formulary, which is our drug coverage plan. And I think that there's a lot of good research that says there is good reason to give patients with diabetes CGMs, even type 2 patients. I think it's ridiculous. In Saskatchewan, we cover 10 test strips a day for type 1 diabetes and 1 test strip a day for type 1 diabetes. It's 10 times more. So, or for type 2. So if you have type 2 diabetes, you get to test your sugars once a day. If you have type 1 diabetes, you get to test your sugars 10 times a day and it's covered by provincial healthcare. But if you need more than that, you have to buy it out of pocket. And so even that's limiting. I know for type 2 diabetics, they should still be checking your sugars.
I think the cost scares people away from taking care of themselves. And I know with type 1s, I would say it's easier for us to recognize the effects of what will happen to our bodies if we don't get our insulin, whereas type 2s feel like they have a lot more leeway. But you have to remember, they're still insulin resistant. And so even though it may happen to us a lot faster, it's still dangerous.
Exactly. And even just improve the quality of your life. Like, what if having a CGM on 4 type 2 diabetics prevents 1 leg amputation? That's worth it, right? Like, it improves quality of life and makes people safer. So now that I've covered sort of like the basic supplies for diabetes, I want to talk about my pump, because pump coverage is sort of weird in Canada, and most provinces don't cover pumps unless you're a kid with type 1 diabetes. So that's super frustrating, because for my friends who were diagnosed as kids, they have a pump right now that was covered, but their next pump they're going to have to pay for. Almost $10,000, some of them. They're extremely expensive. I was really lucky. I got a used pump and it was $300, and I paid for that myself because, again, my life is crazy. But as someone from British Columbia, I do get the Omnipod covered through my medical or through my provincial health insurance, and some of the Medtronic pump if I need it instead of the Omnipod. So I'm really excited for that, because I'm one of 2 provinces across the country that allow adult diabetics to have the pump covered. But again, like, right now, nothing's covered without an endocrinologist prescription. And for those of you who've been listening, you know I still am waiting to see an endocrinologist. And so I have to do this all sort of on my own. And what that looks like is I have to pay for my infusion sets, which are the most expensive part, especially because my pump was so cheap. A month of infusion sets costs as much as my pump does. So it's like 200 and something. And then I have to get the reservoirs and then the insulin. And the insulin is the only thing that's covered through my provincial health insurance. So that's the only thing I can submit receipts for, which, as we talked about, was about $100-ish a month. So everything else I pay for out of pocket, which is almost $600. Again, it makes me want to cry, but it also just makes me so grateful that I'm able to afford this. I don't know what someone else in my position would do if they were here out of province for school. I feel like I would have to go back to BC, which right now isn't possible because of COVID. So I have no idea what would happen.
Yeah, well, I'm curious. Do they train you guys on how to have a discussion with your patient if they can't afford their medications? What would a doctor be able to say when their patient can't afford to take care of themselves? How do you advise someone from there?
I mean, it sucks. I think the biggest thing that doctors need to do is have a frank conversation with their patients about what they can afford, I think, is the first and foremost, like, biggest thing. And then at the point where a patient says, hey, I can't afford this, and I don't know what the state of things is in the United States, but here, like, doctors get samples of everything. And so typically they save samples for patients who can't otherwise afford it. And so making sure that you can find ways to help them. So either providing free samples, connecting them with organizations that provide cheap things. So, like, a lot, and especially in Canada, actually, because private healthcare is so weird and not everything is covered by provincial health insurance, especially brand name stuff. So, like, what you guys are having right now, we don't have, I don't think, but the COVID sort of cheaper, I think it's Humalog through Sanofi, they have like a price reduced sort of card that you can use. And a lot of times, if you email the drug company themselves, they'll send you a discount code to make it more affordable. And then I think the most important thing as a doctor, insulin in Canada would always be covered for your patient. So making sure that your patient knows that they can always get insulin if they need it. But the hard thing are the test strips, especially if you're type 2 and they're not covered, or the CGMs. Like, honestly, and I guess this is sort of the sad thing, is just because it's not covered, it's not something that doctors are able to suggest very often, because we aren't able to assume that our patients can afford $300 a month. And when I told my doctor that I was on a Dexcom, he replied like, oh, what's that? How's that working for you? And so I feel like it's something that's so off his radar because it's so expensive that it's not something he would even necessarily think to recommend as a family doctor. Whereas, like, the endocrinologist in that clinic pushed me way harder to go the CGM route and also knew that I can afford it, which is really, I can't stress that enough. You need to, as a physician or as a patient, you need to have that conversation together to figure out what your best options are, which I would always recommend recommend for you as well, Gianna, when you're in that position is talk to your doctor, because they're a really valuable source of that information. But I think that there's also just this feeling of helplessness that comes from, I mean, more so in the States, but even here, from not being able to provide good care. As a doctor, I know, or I'm not a doctor yet, but as a medical student, I know that my CGM improves my health so much that I can't not buy it, right? Like, I will make sure that I can pay for that, but only because I can. If I had to make the choice between my insulin and my Dexcom, I would choose my insulin.
Yeah, speaking as someone who depends on Dexcom to do anything with my diabetes, I would have to give that up if it came down to that or insulin. Insulin always comes first. But my point is that you shouldn't have to give up either one, because regardless of which I give up, I'm going to be suffering for it.
Absolutely. And like, I think that's the reality, right? Like, I'm going to sound like a broken record. And so are you, right? Like, we both come from such privileged positions where we're able, either through insurance or just through personal means, to be able to afford these things and use them and get the most out of them and make the most out of our health with diabetes. I know you talked last week about how much better you feel when you're sugars are more regular and how much easier that is with your Dexcom. And I think that's why we have so many campaigns for insulin affordability. And you're totally right. Like, we need to be talking about these things and we need to be advocating for people who can't afford it, or for ourselves at some point when we can't afford it. And I know if you want to get involved, there are Facebook groups where you can sort of share supplies and talk about how to get things more accessibly. And you can just search for those. There's lots of good ones and lots of organizations. And I know, Gianna, you've worked with Type 1 International, and I feel like that's something that they work on.
Yeah, I'd say that's their main goal right now, because wherever you go on social media, you can see them with the hashtag Insulin for All. They also run the Caravan to Canada, where they take diabetics from the United States, bring them to Canada where they can get access to cheaper insulin, and bring that back with them. But what I like most is the fact that it's diabetics running this nonprofit, and they're not taking any money from big pharma companies, so there's no confusion there. You can see on their website that they're completing research every year, and they're doing it with actual diabetics living through this. So you can see the average amount a diabetic pays for insulin. You can see how many diabetics are rationing out of the group that they surveyed. And it's really cool, because to me, that's what makes the most impact. When I'm hearing it from the people that are living through it and from the people that are suffering from it, it really puts a face to a number. They're a really genuine group, and if you haven't looked into them yet, I strongly suggest you go check out their website now.
Totally. And I love Type 1 International as an organization. I think that they do really good work, and they do a lot of really good work all around the world. So insulin affordability and diabetic care is not something that's only present in North America. This is something that I know I speak to a lot of diabetics from other countries, and it's something that people face in India, and it's something that people face in Nigeria, and it's something that people face all over the world. I think some of the European countries are exceptionally lucky with their health coverage, but generally people struggle across the world and die from diabetes way too often because they don't have affordable insulin. And I know we've said this before, but it's not a drug that you can abuse. It's not a drug, like, it's just a drug so that you can eat food and survive. That's it. In terms of Canadian stuff, I know, like I said, that Diabetes Canada is probably our biggest advocate. They just released a letter this year really highlighting sort of the research behind why CGMs should be covered by provincial and federal governments, or at least partially covered. But even things like making test strips more accessible and that kind of stuff is something that they work on all the time. And then also, again, providing resources, information for diabetics and practitioners and people. And then the last place is the JDRF, which is the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. And I feel like they spend more time looking for a cure than advocating for affordable insulin, but I do feel like that's changing slightly. I don't think we can say, though, that they aren't funded by pharmaceutical companies, but they are one of the biggest research foundations for diabetes. I know that they are a part of some of that research that Diabetes Canada is using to push the federal government for this coverage. And then the big ask from the Canadian Federation of Medical Students this year was for a true national pharmacare program that would actually cover, because right now we have a weird system of pharmaceutical coverage that doesn't actually cover everything, and we're really pushing to have everything covered. It's harder than it sounds.
Change like that is never easy, but always worth it.
Totally. And I know that we could talk about this for ages, but I really want to hear from you guys. So definitely reach out to us at T1 Talks on Instagram with your experiences and what they are with insulin affordability or the lack thereof.
Yeah, please feel free to send us messages or leave comments about what you're paying for insulin prices. Have you ever experienced rationing yourself, or do you know someone that has? We really want to hear from the people that are living through this. With that, we're going to move on to our weekly goals. You can go ahead and kick us off today, Victoria.
So last week, I wanted to try using the dual bolus feature on my pump, which is where it gives me like some percentage that I decide of my bolus right away, and then it gives an extended bolus of the rest of it for however long I decide. And so it's obviously a lot to learn, and my first try was a total disaster. So I tried it with pasta, but I ended up underdosing the initial bolus. So I tried a 50-50 split, but it ended up giving me like this huge spike, and then I had to try to figure out how to bolus for more, but then I overshot it and it went low, and so then I had to treat my low, and it didn't go well.
Sounds like a normal day in the life of a diabetic.
And it totally is. I feel like things, pizza and pasta, like it's so hard to win. So I'm trying, but I'm at least eating the pizza and the pasta, right?
That's all that really matters.
And so like I have a plan for what I'm going to do next time, but I'm not super keen to try again because I feel like what I have been doing is working.
Yeah, I think it just takes time.
Yeah, totally. And now this week, my week is a whole new week. So I start back in in-person classes or like sessions this week. And that means that I'll be in clinics again, seeing patients. And one of my things that I like to do when I'm seeing patients, but especially now because it's going to be the first time that I've been in clinic since COVID hit and since I've started on insulin injections and been fully type 1 diabetic with a Dexcom and everything. And so this week, I really want to journal some of my experiences and thoughts from what it means to be starting back in clinic, what it might mean to have people asking questions and all of that kind of thing. And then also just starting back in online classes and trying to get my life back together for school to start again. And so I'm hoping to share that with you guys. So stay tuned for what that brings.
I'm really excited for that. I think it's a super cool idea and it's a great way to capture your growth as well.
Yeah. I try to write whenever anything significant happens. And I feel like this is another significant thing. So I'll try to keep track. So Jana, how about your goals?
So last week I tried for the second time to do what I was calling the 24-hour stay in the gray all day something challenge. It actually mostly worked during the day, but at night I really suffered. So I started having these random lows and highs. I still don't really know why, but I did go and talk to my endocrinologist about it, and we've been working on my basal rates. And this past week has just been kind of a mess in the world of diabetes. So I'm going to take that goal and put it away for now, but it's definitely something I think I can come back to. I just have other problems that I'm going to put before that right now.
Well, and you're best to get your basal dose figured out first, right? Like, I think that trying this goal was a great way to figure out, hey, I do need to work on my basal dose before I'm able to achieve this, which is the point of these goals.
Definitely. I think this goal was eye-opening in other ways for me, but I also don't want anyone to feel like the perfect day in range is something that's unachievable for diabetics. It's totally possible. It's just something that will come along with you working on other goals that are related to your diabetes, like carb counting and basaling and everything else that's tied in there. So it takes a while and it takes a lot of work, but you can definitely do it. So don't give up on that. Moving on from my TED talk, this week's goal is going to focus on pre-bolusing. I'm the type of person that never pre-boluses, and I pay for that because I get a lot of highs and a lot of lows because I'm taking my insulin too late. The carbs have already hit my body. And then when I notice my sugar is high, I start to overcorrect and end up with a low. So pre-bolusing is responsible for a lot of my highs and lows. And I think if I can get ahead of that, take my insulin 30 minutes before, then I'll see more of my numbers in range. But yeah, that's my main goal for this week.
Absolutely. I think that that's an awesome goal. And I know like pre-bolusing definitely changed my ability to be able to eat more of what I wanted while still keeping my sugars in check. I know a lot of people stay away from things like pizza or pasta. And like I talk about those things as sort of being hard to dose for, and they are. But I think that there is a way to dose for them, and pre-bolusing is a huge part of my game there, and something that I think I forget to do sometimes recently and would really help with my post-dinner highs that I see sometimes. But I'm really excited to see how that is going for you next week.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes next week.
Great. And so we'll catch you next time.
Until then, don't forget to reach out on Instagram.